Views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the following podcast belong solely to the host and its contributors. They are not necessarily the views of our employers, organizations, committees, or other group or individual.
I'm David Campbell.
And I am Jordan Bullock.
And I'm Joseph Whitney. This is Brewing with BIM,
where we talk about construction processes, technology, BIM, and beer.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Brewing with BIM. As usual, I'm Joe Whitney, and with me is Dave Campbell. What's going on?
Hey, not much, Joe. I'm excited for another episode, man.
Yeah. This is going to be an old throwback for you listeners. This is a just purely Dave and Joey rant. Jordan is out sick. We have some fun topics to be had. But before we go down that rabbit hole, man, I got to ask, what are you drinking?
Ah, dude, I have a special sipper today. I cracked open the birthday bottle. So for those of you that don't know, for my birthday, I went down to Louisville, Kentucky and checked out the Bourbon Trail. Got to check out a few distilleries down there. Bardstown was a really good one. What was the other one? Michter's. There were so many of them down there. But I ended up buying a bottle of Angel's Envy with their port finish. And today I decided to go ahead and crack that open. Joe, I sent you a picture of it, dude. That's a beautiful freaking bottle, man, with the angel wings that come down on the front.
That might be the podcast episode picture for social media.
Yeah, dude. It's a beautiful box, man, and a beautiful bottle. And while I was at the store, they have a port syrup. And this port syrup is a replacement for your simple syrup. Well, your simple syrup. You're all good. It's a simple syrup replacement for your old fashioned. So I poured some of that port syrup in there, hit it with a couple agnostic bitters and some orange bitters, and made myself an old fashioned.
Dude, nice, man. Nice. I'm a fan of Angel's Envy. They got some good stuff. I think it was you I was talking to about the
dude. When you first told me about it. And you told me about Heaven's Hill. Oh man, I wish.
Not Heaven Hill is like the McCormick's brand.
Oh, dude, what was it then? It was Bob Dylan's.
Heaven's Door.
Heaven's Door.
Heaven's Door. Yeah. I almost butchered that.
Good Lord.
You got Hill stuck in my head. I'm like, dude, like bringing back memories of Everclear burning both ends, man. Like, geez, Heaven's Hill. Oh, plastic jug. No, yeah. So Heaven's Door, yeah. So the owner, founder, or whatever, sold the Angel's Envy to one of the bigger companies. I think Santori or something, or Sazerac, I think.
It's starts with a B.
B? Bacardi. Sorry.
Bacardi. Yep.
Yeah, Sazerac owns the other distilleries, Pappy and.
Yep. Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry, man. Yeah, but he left. He heard through the grapevine that Bob Dylan wanted to start his own distillery. He was into whiskey and everything. So he reached out to Bob and, try to like let him know, hey, I know stuff about whiskey. I had this company, and that was his new project. And he and Bob Dylan started Heaven's Door. And it's wildly successful. They did a few collaborations, one with... who's the Irish whiskey company? Redbreast.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, cool stuff. I'm a huge Bob Dylan fan. At least at one point in my life, I was. I don't know if I told you this story. I was walking. I lived in this smallish town, small city, large town in North Texas. I was walking home from school or friend's house. I don't even remember, but in the neighborhood, a few neighborhoods out from mine. And I see on the ground a CD back when CDs were a thing. For those of you guys that don't know, we used to have to listen to music on round discs. And you could burn them yourself and make your own music. This one was a burned disc. And on one side, it said, this will change your life. And I was like, back before, nowadays, I'd probably pick it up and be like, oh, this is probably a virus. I can't put this in my computer. But back then, I picked it up and I listened to it. And it was Bob Dylan. Got me through some weird times in my life when I was younger. And, I even named my daughter Dylan
after
Bob Dylan. So, I'm a big fan of Bob Dylan and any whiskey that he touches and anything he's affiliated with or has ever been affiliated with. So it's kind of cool that this, you know, you're on the Angels MD kick, man. So I think next we're going to have to go down Heaven's Door, though.
Hell yeah, dude. That's awesome. I can't like, honestly, I started actually I sent you a package, which should be coming to you soon, which should allow you to kind of, yeah, you'll see when it gets to you. I think you'll be pretty excited. But I figured we'd start down that road.
It was your birthday and you sent me a present. I love this.
Right. Well, I was thinking about you, dude. I'm like, man, I'm down here tasting whiskey. I wish Joey could be here with me. And I'm like, oh man, I got to send him something. So I got you a package and sent it out to you. And, figured next time I come out there, if you have some left, we'll fucking try it together. If not, then I'll have to buy myself a fucking, taster set and try it out.
Well, my 40th birthday is coming up in about 4 months. So then I'll have to buy you a gift for my birthday.
There you go, right? And so on and so forth. Dude, well, so I actually just looked it up. And, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, man, let me say what I'm drinking, dude.
Oh, yeah. What are you drinking? I'm sorry.
Yeah, man. Ah, oh, robbing me, dude. I had this, this whole speech prepared about how I'm feeling patriotic, man. No, I'm like... I'm drinking, I'm drinking 21st Amendment, nothing fancy, 21st Amendment Brew for Your Die IPA. It's an old standby. I love it. It's easy to, here's the thing, Pennsylvania, I don't know if you know this, beer stores are stupid. The dumbest freaking thing ever is I can't go into a normal store and buy beer. I have to go into a specialty store and buy beer or a place that has a beer license. Most of those places only sell like very popular beers, like they're gas stations that have a beer, you know, cooler in it, that has a certain type of license where they can sell beer, but they only have like six types of beers. It's pretty bad. So this is like the best of all of that. Sorry, man. Go ahead.
No, you're all good, brother. You're all good. I was actually just going to say that, I looked it up and, It was pretty cool to find, but the name Angel's Envy is a nod to the angel share, which is the spirit that's lost through evaporation each year during barrel aging. So I thought that was that's pretty cool, man. I thought that was I thought that was pretty neat to see kind of as you know, you typically pour a shot out, but I didn't know that they called it the angel's share. Essentially the evaporation.
Yeah, man. Dude, I'm dying.
I got to get up on the lingo, apparently, here. I looked that up. I thought that was pretty neat. I got the, it was cool because during my birthday, we went down there and I met with one of the guys I was deployed with, and we got our bottles engraved to, you know, our angels that are up in heaven. We have six buddies we lost overseas, and it's pretty neat when you start connecting the dots with it. I just loved it because I thought, you know, angels, and I'm like, oh, that's pretty badass that they got the angel wings on the front of it. That's pretty cool. I like the meaning behind it. I can get behind it.
Yeah, man. It's and it's a damn good tasting whiskey too, is the other side of it. It's good when there's something meaningful and you've got a good product.
Yes, sir. Yep. But anyway, man, sorry guys.
Yeah, no. I don't know how to recover from this. I would say the best way to recover from this is just to tell our listeners what we're going to be talking about today. And that is, I know some of your favorite topics and something that we talk about all the time, but figured it deserves its own episode, and that is integrations and automation. And I think you wanted to do like a versus, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to talk about some of the differences because I see a lot of people will talk about, you know, I want this as an integration. I want this integration to work in this way. And in you know, some ways we have to start kind of defining that. It's not really an integration. Do you want automation or do you want integration? Automation can, you know, set up a trigger and run off of, you know, certain characteristics or certain things that need it, that essentially need to be triggered in order for it to go. Whereas, you know, an integration is a little bit more, I want to say, in depth, in a way, right? I mean, but there's similarities and there's some differences between the two. And I thought it would be pretty cool to kind of talk about that.
Yeah, definitely, man. Like, I feel like integrations can lead to automations, right? So in my mind, when I think of automation, I think of robotics and, you know, stuff like that. Integrations are more on the software side, maybe, in my mind. But, like, automation is almost like a physical output, like, because it's something that can be measured.
Yeah.
Like, it's a physical thing, right? Like, it's a physical gain, like, in some function. Yeah.
Sorry, in my mind. No, you're all good, dude, brother. On the flip side of that coin, I was just thinking, usually when I think of automation as, you know, a Revit designer and I've worked in Dynamo, that's where my mind instantly goes is like Dynamo scripts and automation there, right? It's there to set up to do certain things, repetitive tasks to save me time. You know, it's an automation, whether it's recognizing, you know, concrete piles where it meets with a steel column and I want to put an anchor plate, you know, and certain bolt arrangement and things like that. Or, you know, whether I want to go ahead and connect and weld different items together.
Ooh, but is that integration or automation? Or is it
that's automation,
automation through integration?
In my mind, that's automation. Integration.
But Dynamo is a plugin for that's integrated into Revit.
I love that point. That's a very, very good point. I mean, so I feel like you're on the path, but at the same time, the problem is, where does the data go? It doesn't go anywhere other than Revit, right? An integration, in my mind, at its source, means that data flows from one source to another, right? Albeit the automations that happen within the process or the triggers that are needed, you know, different things like that in order to make that integration happen. But in my mind, an automation happens in one area. An integration is when data starts flowing back and forth.
I think maybe that's where I'm hung up, because to me, an integration means two things that are merged, and maybe it's not the data, but the functionality at least is merged. Like, okay, well, we'll stick with the Dynamo example for now.
Mm-hmm.
In Dynamo, Dynamo is using Revit information, and its integration into Revit, own functionality.
Yep.
Inside of Dynamo to pass that data again back through.
It is integrated with the Revit code.
So you're it is integrated.
But it's also leads automated. To
automation. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. This is an interesting rabbit hole.
End of episode, guys. Let's go.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, in all reality, there are, you know, there's so many capabilities and guys, Dynamo is a stepping stone, right? You have Python capabilities, C#, JavaScript. Now that they've opened up the Autodesk platform services for data exchanges, there's a lot of integration capability or data migration, automation, you know, capabilities there. I mean, shoot, dude, we were talking about one of the big things I talk about, you know, when we start, you know, getting into the conversations about data and BIM models or construction data, whatever it is, you know, everything that we do, whether you're looking at a BIM model, you're looking at, you know, CAD, everything evolves around the information, right? Around the data. And making that data flow from one portion to another, you know, being able to, let's say, analyze that data. You know, we talked about this with Carlos during AU, and I definitely want to have him on for another conversation. But essentially, that piece to me, you know, being able to integrate and automate something like data analysis or dashboards telling you how many pieces have been modeled or telling you how many pieces you have, what design changes have been done versus what needs to be done. There's so many different ways that we can use an integration with automation, right? So maybe it's not a versus conversation here, Joey. Maybe we actually need to translate that over to,
automation through integration.
Through integration, yeah. I like that a lot. That
makes more sense in my head, too. I was just curious what juicy tidbits you had with the versus. Well, but yeah, integration leads to automation. And I think maybe Dynamo was a poor example, but like, if you can integrate data, you can automate data, because the integration allows you to use something that's not native to that specific, you know, group or application or what have you that's being integrated to allow the functionality of something else. So there's potential for automation there. And between you and me, Dynamo, while powerful and awesome, is a band-aid.
Oh yeah.
I think everybody that we know that gets into Dynamo at some level realizes the shortcomings of it and kind of moves on to create their own application or you know, full baked Revit. Yeah, yeah. Their own Revit. You know, they code directly in the Revit API instead. Their own plugins, or find some other way of automating it. There's just so many ways to achieve it. Dynamo seems like a project-based, one-off, maybe proof of concept, say, but once something becomes more useful over time, I start to see stuff like that become more integrated, especially if it's a very useful piece, right? It's something that somebody's going to take the time out to fully bake, because the thing about Dynamo is it breaks, and it breaks often.
Yeah, that's definitely true, especially as you're moving between different versions. If nodes have come under maintenance, or I mean, even the APIs, as I've learned throughout the past, you know, couple of years that I've been able to code between BIM 360 and ACC, APIs also get deprecated and they change and they get updates. So it's, you know, it's one thing or another. Either way, we're going to have to maintain that environment. Now, I will tell you, Dynamo's quite a bit more. But at the same time, Dynamo creates like a script, a DYN script that you can actually, you know, bring from different forward from different versions. But there also in lies the problem, too. If you're using different packages, right, if you're using different packages from different creators, and if they have a 2022 version, but they haven't finished the 2023 version, some of the nodes that you have in there are not going to work until either, you know, they publish the new package or you code it yourself as a band-aid to patch it through until, you know, the next update comes. But I mean, even then, you're right, Joe. I mean, in all reality, a self-managing code-based environment, it's nice, but it is kind of a band-aid on, in that sense of we're not really automating. Like, I mean, you are, but you still have to specify the parameters. There's still code that needs to go into it, which is, you know, it is automation in itself. If you think about it, the coding of it to grab the different pieces and essentially specify the workflow or the steps that those things need to go through, that is really automation. But it is very touchy. And I do also want to say that it's kind of a low level, but at the same time, may I also come back and flip this coin and say, I think that Dynamo was on the forefront of integration and automation. I really do want to say that in the sense of visual coding.
Go ahead.
No, you're all good. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would never take away from what Dynamo's done. I'm just saying, in where it stands today, Dynamo, and the thing about Dynamo is it's still underutilized, and I feel like it's got a lot of life ahead of it because so many people are scared of it, or maybe don't know how to get in it, or maybe it's overwhelming. We had this whole thing a while ago with Travis Williams at one of our user groups where it was demystifying Dynamo, and even having such a talented person like him break it down, it's still like, damn, there's a lot that goes into Dynamo to make it successful for your codes and stuff. So I think those, what did you call it? Self-managed code?
I think that's what you said. You said, that's a good one.
No, I thought that's what you just called it a second ago. I thought you said like something like self-managed code or so. Anyways, I think stuff like that is highly important because it does push the industry forward. It just takes the most innovative people to kind of push it there. So, like Travis, who's a whiz with Dynamo, and he's like left it behind and doing like way bigger stuff nowadays. But like he used it to like automate, to truly automate like panel layout for like building facades and stuff, like with to make sure that all the shapes and sizes were different. 3D, size.
They were using it for layout of train tracks and what was it up in Washington State? What project were we on where they were utilizing Dynamo?
Was it Sound Transit?
Sound Transit, yes, yeah. Sir. That was the one. And I mean, dude, honestly, yes. I mean, it's there are a lot when you get some very, very capable people. And even then, I mean, shoot, look at what I'm not going to call him incapable, but Peter, he was not a coder.
He says he's incapable, but he's the smartest.
No, I'm saying he's not. Exactly. He says he is. Like, dude's like,
I'm just a plumber.
just a plumber. And I'm like, dude, get out of this here. Freaking Dynamo script you just wrote. Yeah. Like, God, man, you just drew pipe and created a freaking trench surface from underneath that pipe with your offsets. That's pretty freaking cool, man.
Yeah. And he created individual nodes and like, it was crazy. Like he is, he's a whiz. Like he's very humble and so like it takes innovative people like that to push the industry forward. So like my head, I think I've talked about this before. My head's always in a different space these days as I'm starting to like personally and hobby, you know,
I'm curious as to what the next Dynamo is going to be. You know what I mean? It's coming. Like it's got to be out there. We have listeners out all over the place. There are people all over the place that are using BIM and Revit. You know, obviously Dynamo is great and it's going to keep growing. And I know that, but I'm curious to see what the next iteration is going to be now that the APIs are open.
I think we're already there. I think it's just making the use cases more mainstream and training the modules, but I think it's an AI capability with BIM. And I know I'm going to pause there because I know you've got a lot to talk about when it comes to that, but before I let you dive down that rabbit hole, another piece that I think, you know, really starts to bring this home again, like my mind is down this hobbyist track now with manufacturing, you know, CNC, 3D printers, laser, you know, laser cutting, stuff like that. Like my mind's on that track. And I got my wife a Cricut and she's like on the same space with me now with the makerism stuff. And having open source or you know, editable things like Dynamo, but in our space, like Arduino or Marlin or whatever. Like
consumer grade.
I mean, these are actually used in commercial applications, industrial applications too, but it's just what people are doing with them. Like having that stuff right there, you can like literally just go online. Autodesk has this website, Inventables, I think that's what it is. Instructables, Inventables, one of them, something like that. That has like, you know, everybody doing DIY stuff. It's an Autodesk owned thing, but you can see the crazy stuff people are doing in that space with open source automation. Now, just think, you know, we're on the commercial side here in the BIM stuff. The stuff is, you know, probably more highlighted in like use cases and in marketing stuff more so than that. But imagine if we had like some kind of Inventables, but for BIM, like, look what I'm doing. I think we'd start to see a lot more stuff. The forums were great back in the day, but I think the disconnect ends up being a lot of companies want to privatize, not share the things that they're working on in that kind of space because it's almost proprietary at that point in time. If I give up the automation that I'm doing where I'm showing you how to do it, then we are not like, you know, we're hoarding it, or we're not hoarding it and capitalizing like we should be. Yep. Instead, we're putting out there for everybody. And that might be a different mindset. But in the manufacturing and maker space, everybody's sharing the cool things they're doing. Like, it's crazy, the stuff that people do with open source automation. But I think that's maybe, like, one of the shortcomings on the BIM side for Dynamo is, yeah, it's great. There's some great forums and a lot of people out there helping. But it doesn't have quite the attention. And it's still somewhat overwhelming. Whereas in the hobby space, it... because it's not so proprietary, people are willing to help out and chime in with another company's project. Like, oh, you're doing this? Well, that's cool. Have you tried this, and this, and this? But I know a few people, I'll say that, I'll take a step back and play devil's advocate to myself, like Mike Myers, who will freely post up what he's working on and ask for help. And then at the same time, on LinkedIn, spin around and answer other people's questions that might be competitors to what he's doing, but yeah, helping them to the needs. So like, there is a network. It's just like, it seems more daunting to get tapped into that network in the BIM space for open source, you know, the Dynamo code sort of stuff. Anyways, can it worms open, go down AI and BIM.
No, you're all good, dude. I mean, AI and BIM, that's a whole track. I mean, honestly, I wrote a, you know, put together a blog post the other day on the potential of AI and BIM as an integration, right? And I mean, obviously, one part of the conversation could be to set up those automations. We know that AI, such as ChatGPT, can help you. I mean, obviously, I'm going to say it's not perfect. I will tell you guys that sometimes.
I'm
going
to challenge you every time you say ChatGPT, by the way,
yeah,
to name another AI. Because all we're doing at this point in time is we're yes, ChatGPT is great. I use it. You use it. It's an amazing tool. But I just want to take a step back and challenge you here to start referencing other AI engines only so that we're putting other ones more mainstream or as mainstream to let people know that
right.
ChatGPT is not your only option. Let's talk about Bard and the
Bard and Watson the new
acquisition.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say Bard has a new learning module. Bard new module. I'll look it up, but it's got its own new module. And then there's Azure, the Copilot.
Azure uses OpenAI. Copilot is an AI, but it's built on top of like Office products. It's really more of an automation to help you with like grammar correction and stuff like that. I have been learning quite a bit about those.
Wait, so you're saying Azure uses
OpenAI? They do. Yes.
Really?
100%. Azure has an Azure OpenAI. Now, I will also say Amazon does have their own. It's
They just sink a bunch of money into some AWS, acquisitions for the language module or for the learning modules.
Yeah, well, Amazon, dude. So if I can tell everybody, I have been going down the path of what should I pick, AWS or Azure. Right. My mindset lately has really been focused a lot on integrating machine learning and AI with BIM, but also with our construction environment and enabling data analytics within that with machine learning. So we start using different pieces of AI, such as machine learning, pattern recognition, but also natural language recognition, a few different pieces, right? And I've been diving into kind of which way to go down. Now, what I've seen is our industry typically leans more towards the Azure environment. AWS.
Windows PC has a huge stronghold in construction. My sister-in-law, who just left Dick's Sporting Goods on the design side, like graphic design sort of stuff, is now at a construction firm, and she's a big Apple user, and she's like, I can't believe everybody uses Windows. I gotta get a PC now. I'm like, yeah. Microsoft is king in construction. I'm sorry, I don't know what to tell you.
It is, dude.
Everybody lives in Excel.
Oh, it's Lex. That's what it is. Amazon Lex. That is that's the AI for AWS. So there, in all honesty, guys, Joey, thank you so much for calling me out on that, dude, because you're right. I do tend to, especially when we have conversations, I tend to lean towards ChatGPT just because I use it quite a bit. But there are so many different products out there. AWS has and what you'll notice, let's say it's Google or it's AWS or it's, you know, Microsoft. All three of those are actually going to have connecting pieces. So this is the beautiful thing about those two. Like, I mean, interesting thing is, I don't think they talk very well between each other. They have, you know, obviously APIs. So yes, the integration is definitely possible, but why, right? AWS is one environment Microsoft is another. But what we're finding is these common data environments are popping up in this instance too, with Amazon Web Services. They're going to have their own AI. They're going to have machine learning. They're going to have data storage. So whether it's blob, it's queryable, it's, you know, they have so many different pieces that you can start utilizing. Microsoft is the same way. They're going to have the Azure environment. They actually do utilize OpenAI for their artificial intelligence. Google does have their own. What is Google's?
Bard. And it runs on Gemini. That's the thing I couldn't remember earlier.
Runs on Gemini. Okay.
Bard
is Google. Yeah, Bard is Google's. So there are several different AI platforms, and they're all going to have their strengths and their weaknesses. I will tell you what I've learned so far is that if you're looking for secure, I mean, obviously Google is a big name out there, but two of the biggest, I mean, AWS and Microsoft, right? Those are really the two biggest players that I've seen in this space as far as secured data.
Which is data. Interesting because you said Microsoft runs on ChatGPT.
So this is actually, I mean, a lot of you have probably seen this recently, but ChatGPT did release their enterprise environment to where you can actually train your own model instead of putting data out to the public. In my mind, Microsoft has probably been using that for a while with their own Azure connections to OpenAI. ChatGPT Enterprise has introduced that to, I think, the masses in the sense that, you know, anybody can create now an enterprise account. You guys can train your form of a ChatGPT model that is not going to be, you know, what the public and your everyday person can see. They actually have to log in onto your environment in order to see the results of your training, your AI model, right? So what I've seen is, I mean, there's a lot of capabilities here, guys, especially with, and by the way, Joe, we are looking into that right now. We are looking into ChatGPT Enterprise just to look at what that would, see what that would look like, right, for us. But again, guys, there are so many different platforms out there. I encourage you guys to look around and see what's best for you. I have found that Azure will give you a free trial. They'll actually give you 200 credits or $200 worth of credits to run towards your environment, whether that's data storage and data query and, you know, artificial intelligence. They do have a very good system. The dashboard is very well put together. There's some good documentation on it as well. But I would say if you're not like the strongest in C#, Python, JavaScript, like if you're not really, really good at writing code in order to integrate those together and make integrations with that environment, that might be a little bit more difficult, right? Now, however, Microsoft has come out, and this is also, dude, this is actually perfect that you bring that up. Microsoft has released, starts with a P. Oh, Prometheus? Oh gosh. Huh? No, Prometheus. What is the movie?
Copilot uses Prometheus, which is their model for optimizing hardware acceleration. And that uses ChatGPT-4. That's what its AI model is composed of. That's
Microsoft Power Automate.
Power Automate is crazy. We've got a guy on our team that is phenomenal with it.
Yes. So check this out, Joey. So I'm kind of internally geeking out here, guys, if you couldn't tell. But essentially, I do a lot of work with Workato, right? ACC Connect. That's my tool just because essentially I got a license for that. Power Automate, I also have a license for. I have not been able to spend as much time in it as I wanted to yet. But essentially, you're going to start to see some overlap with that because, as I mentioned earlier, Dynamo, I think, was on the forefront of visual, you know, low-code, no-code environments. Dynamo was one of the first that we started seeing that, right? Now we can see it in Microsoft. You can see it in Amazon Web Services. I have not had time to really check out Google. Just to be honest with you guys, I've spent my time in the main big two. And both of them have tools that are going to be reminiscent of a low-code, no-code environment in order to make the integrations or their other pieces talk to each other and to make that data flow. That in itself has been awesome, dude. Whether you know you're querying your blob storage and you want to structure your data to pull it into Power BI, to build dashboards, to publish up to the construction cloud, or even just to publish up to the cloud and share with the rest of your teams. I mean, there's so many possibilities there. And guys, obviously, AWS or Microsoft, both of those are going to have the capabilities. And there's so many pieces there to tap into. It's nuts.
Let me give you my some food for thought here, man. You can tell me what you think. Mm-hmm. All right. So Bard, mm-hmm. my experience with it, I think, was before the Gemini module rollout thing. And I felt like if you had used ChatGPT 3 or newer, you might feel like Bard was lacking and dumber. Like I asked it stuff that it should have been able to answer and it couldn't answer mm-hmm. them. That said, I'm sure it was probably smarter in other areas than ChatGPT. But here's the thing. How many applications is Google embedded in? And before you answer that, the answer is all of them. Mm-hmm. Google, 100%. Everything that's on the Play Store is Google, right? The Google Play Store. Yep. Everything that your maps, like everything, the Google suite of products, the YouTube, like Bard has the biggest library of data to comb through and learn from. Like it's going to be the smartest in no time flat. Like there's no doubt in my mind that Bard is going to be smarter when Google catches up if they continue down this path.
Yeah.
That said,
go ahead.
Microsoft owns business applications and schools and all that sort of stuff too, right? They standardize on Microsoft. They might have the biggest user base out of all of them, right? Potentially to help train their modules and to actually use the applications, that sort of stuff too. And then go to AWS, who is primarily a cloud services company at a, you know, for business to business stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
So they're going to be integrated at a business level and have specific use cases for every niche industry they touch, whether that's, you know, DOD and government to
shipping to
logistics to maybe they're working with Netflix and, you know, Netflix stores all their stuff on AWS, right? So I assume so. That's still
ACC, case, man. ACC is all on AWS.
Yeah, yeah. The construction cloud, right? I'm sure Procore and all of them, I'm sure they're all on AWS, right?
Yep.
They're going to have all these niche sets of data that they can analyze and specific, you know, make their modules specific to your industry.
Dude, like, You have brought up such a great point there. What is more valuable in our instance? In where you have Google, where in a few years, it could be very, very generalized. It's opened up to so many different data points that it could be so generalized. In the AI world, that is more intelligent. It is a more intelligent version of artificial intelligence because it's generalized, right? But that question there, we pivot back, like what is more valuable? If we're trying to use AI in the construction sector, the construction industry, wouldn't it be more valuable for us to have a construction focused AI that has been trained in the industry by different projects over the years, you know, things like that.
But even in construction, there's specific use cases, right? So there's sometimes we don't need to look at
even
overall
BIM,
project data
even design.
To understand the project data. So if we're looking at design, we're looking at financials, payouts, we're looking at billables. And imagine feeding it laser scan data so that it's automating your
progress tracking and
verification progress tracking
and safety
your verification automating that But the AI module is doing that and then calculating who gets paid what, when, where, and how. Like, there are specific use cases that we can kind of look at and derive just in construction, like where the benefits might be.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%, dude. I mean, we were talking about this before the episode, and I know you pointed out that plug-in smart review. But man, I've been on this whole kick lately about introducing AI to BIM and, you know, creating this symbiotic partnership. Obviously, you know, just the low-hanging fruit in my mind is helping the designer to meet code requirements, lead requirements, you know, anything like that that's specific to the project. So there's many instances there. The automation, obviously, that we can try to set up utilizing some forms of intelligence. But one of my other big pieces for that article that I wrote, that I put together, let's say that, I will tell you guys 100%, I had assistance with AI putting that together. I will tell you that I also learned how to use DALL-E. I have never before tried to use AI generated images. So that was an experience. But I did get some pretty cool, like a couple usable things out of it. One of the big things that I really wanted to kind of mention there was, you know, along the lines of project management with a BIM model, right? Because that's where it starts. And a lot of people will start to talk about, okay, how do we start to schedule off of this model? How do we make this constructible? And a lot of times, if you can start to introduce intelligence into that, because, you know, a lot of times you think about, we start to, when we look at, let's say, fabrication or prefabrication workflows, we'll start to spool things, we'll put things on sheets, we try to set things out to make sure we automation, right? We try to get that automation set forth and use that automation to create sheets that will actually go to the equipment or go to the individuals in the fab shop that are going to prefabricate everything to make sure that it's ready to go, right? Now, imagine, in my mind, having and intelligence watching over that or understanding, feeding that, taking from that library, like we talked about, but a kind of focused library in terms of fabrication times and the pieces that are included, you know, what comes from the warehouse, what's delivered, you know, things like that, to actually start creating and managing a project schedule from the BIM model.
Oh, 100%. And I feel like we might be jumping ahead, but if we get Alice Technologies back on here pretty soon, we could start having some good conversations about that. Before we go down that rabbit hole, I do want to backtrack. You said DALL-E earlier, that was your first time using it. There's an application called Canva, which I believe uses DALL-E as its image generator, and you get to feed it, you know, sort of stuff.
Canva, but I've never used it.
So Jordan uses it to edit photo or create photos for the podcast and you know, make nice little flyers and stuff. Like, he does a good job with it. I think he's got the pro version. I was just using the free trial. And it's a good way for, like, so my wife's into Cricut and stuff. It's a good way to generate images for, you know, you want to lay out on cup shirts, invites, whatever, and you can make them with your little Cricut and stuff. But so it's a cool tool. That said, like, they have their own image generation thing in it. And literally, I'm like 99.9999% sure. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and say I'm 100% sure on this. It uses DALL-E to generate its images. The thing is, it's so stupid. Like, you could say, I've got a prime example of this too. You could say, like, generate an image saying brewing with BIM and I want a Tyrannosaurus Rex. It will, but horribly. Say, I want a Tyrannosaurus Rex stomping over a city. It'll do the Tyrannosaurus Rex stomping over the city, but it'll spell brewing with BIM with like 13 W's and four I's and just, it's horrible. Rob Sinclair, big shout out to my boy Rob. He recently did a barrel pick. He spent ungodly amounts of money getting it. It was a good barrel. It was a little sweet for my taste. I had an opportunity to buy some bottles. I passed only because of timing. I just came back from a trip and he was a tight.
Next time that happens, let me know.
It was good. I drank some with him out in Hershey. Yeah. Again, it was a little sweet for me for sipping, but I would have mixed it. It would have been a great old fashioned whiskey. You know, it was good. It was a good thing. But anyways, he was using Dolly to generate a logo for his whiskey, and he wanted the Pittsburgh skyline, but it was like duplicating buildings, and he ended up having to like go in and like doctored up himself to do it. So it's like it's getting smarter, but it's not like not nearly enough people are using it.
Yeah.
Or how do you give constructive feedback to an image generation engine for text, for language module? It's pretty easy, but how do you say, oh, you fucked up that one building, you know, three buildings over from the left? Like, it doesn't know. Like, it doesn't know what you're saying.
And when you say, I want to see a pipe clash in a Revit model, it's going to tell you what? Like, I tried. That did not, it did not generate. Like, so, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And so Dolly is great, not really usable yet. Yep. That said, on the Microsoft suite of things, they did release one for image generation called Microsoft Designer. I haven't tried it yet, but I feel like maybe we should give that a whirl next time. And before I circumnavigate back to Alice, I wanted to give you a use case for, because you mentioned briefly the smart review tool on talking about code review using it in AI and stuff. And there's a lot of tools that are out there, ICC, all that sort of stuff that allows you to do code analysis. Automating it would be great. But I do have a gauge.
Well, that's the talk that we had. Well, that's the talk that we were having kind of pre-podcast. That's the drawback of the app in that sense, is that you'd have to take a done Revit model and then analyze it for the code and then go ahead and make those changes, or let's say a stale. It's just a stagnant Revit model at that point in time, and that's what it analyzes, right? The better process in my mind is if we could start to automate that and really integrate it instead of just giving me the capability to, you know, analyze it at a certain point in time. I get it, you know, obviously it's controllable and things like that because they might take time to do the analysis. But, you know, as we start getting to days of, interference check is a big tool, but kind of collision avoidance is what I want to say, or clash avoidance. Like, we should start to try to automate this and bring in some form of intelligence that can tell you while you're designing this HVAC, it's not to size. Actually, this is what would fit better. Or as you're designing this structural seismic assembly, like, okay, this is what has been tested in these instances. Well, this is the preferred.
At that point, you probably wouldn't even need to model it. You would probably just say, give me a system that would be ideal. Yeah, fit this space. So whether it's an HVAC system, right? Lay out all my, you know, reducers and, you know, air handling unit, like lay it all out.
At the same time, create a system
for me and give me, you know, 10 different iterations and stay below this price budget.
Yeah.
And then report back the CFM or whatever for each room and overall system, you know, analysis to give you that information. Like,
that's a good starting point, though. But the problem with that is, there's no form of intelligence that is going to recognize plumbing walls or, you know, areas that you do not want to run. Like you want to run it out to the hallway and you want to go ahead and make a T here or an elbow here. You know, Revit has some tools that initially will help us with laying out, but there's no intelligence to it. Now, yes, I get what you're
saying. You like recognize a room? Is that what you're saying? Because as long as you recognize the room, there's a room, right?
Well, it's not just the room, brother. It's the surrounding elements. It's everything inside of that room. If you're going to lay out piping, or you're even going to lay out piping or condensation lines or plumbing, you're going to lay out electric, whatever you're running inside of that building. Essentially, let's say with piping lines that are going to run out of a room and they're going to run over and back up. You got to think about what that is running out into. Like, you don't want to run into certain walls or certain wall types or certain items inside of the element, like the Revit model itself.
I feel like a lot of that's solvable with a tag or attribute information of like a parameter. Like we can solve this, I feel like. Again,
you would have to train it. Exactly. But that would be very specific.
That might actually force people to use BIM. Yes, me. But Next episode, AI forces BAM adoption. Like, there you go.
Dude, I mean, shoot, we could have a whole conversation about forcing standards there, but that's a whole nother,
But before I divest too far from the building codes thing that you brought up with Smart Review, and Evolve Labs has a code review plugin, ICC, they all have like a code plugin for analyzing code after the building's built. You're right. It'd be nice to do it as it comes up, but that got me thinking about specs. You know, there's without saying names, there are some spec automation tools out there that are pretty cool. And I, you know, again, you and I have a day job, and in our day job, I was talking about spec automation, and the customer was like, "Oh, why can't I train ChatGPT to do this?" I'm like, "I don't think you can." And he came back to me with, "Look what I just did," and showed me he trained ChatGPT to pull out of his spec. Now, was it 100%? No, it wasn't. He had to go back through and look, and he probably would have, you know, spent equal as many times amount of time as he would have had he, you know, just done it without the ChatGPT part. But that said, that's only going to get smarter, right? It's kind of like the Bluebeam count tool, right? So you do a visual count on toilets, and it misses one toilet. Well, that one toilet costs you money. You got to go back and figure out. So it still takes manual review. But if you can train these things, it'll get time.
Oh, yeah, that's 100%. Now, imagine if we could have an integration or an automation that would essentially translate the specs and create Revit families from the spec and have that inside of the model. That would be freaking amazing. Oh, my gosh. You know how much time that would save? I mean, obviously, a lot of people have standardized, you know, families that they use. But, I mean, even in family creation, if we could upload a Revit or a spec and have it essentially check our family or place in the needed pieces to coordinate, you know, meet that spec, that would be freaking awesome. Although it would be probably on a project by project basis, because of course the specs change. So that'd probably be ideal.
But I feel like that's manageable, especially now considering our friends over at Unify were acquired by Autodesk.
Yeah, dude.
And they have the management tool. They also have their own content library.
Are Autodesk Seek. They are Autodesk Seek. That's pretty much what they've become at this point.
No, they're better than Autodesk.
I mean, obviously they're better than what they've
been. Because they actually enforce the management of the families in addition to the library database. So, look, I never want to be one to bash a company for not seeing the writing on the wall, because look, hindsight is 20/20. But Autodesk really messed up when they didn't acquire Siskiyou, or whatever it was called in its previous life, the fabrication systems. Like, they really needed to acquire a content management system, but Autodesk at the time was not in the content management space.
Yep.
That said, that's really what they needed to get mass adoption from the MEP industry for Revit. Like, being mandated to use Revit is one thing, but they've developed over the years, you know, fabrication databases, all that stuff, don't really translate very well to Revit. Yes, we can bring in a fabrication database. We can even bring in MAJ instances. But at the end of the day, they're still fabrication entities, not necessarily native Revit families. And that's where we really need to be to really, make fabrication really powerful for MEP subs.
Yep.
100%. Now, that said, you know, I've kicked them a little bit for not doing that acquisition. Now we're at the point where they recognize, okay, we did not we failed to do this, and we failed to become a content creation company. We sold off our Seek because it didn't have the same adoption. While it was a great platform, it didn't have the same adoption that a manufacturer created database would. And they've gone down that rabbit hole too with their own fabrication systems and a manufacturing database. And I don't even know if we're any closer to that even coming to fruition when that was announced like 6 years ago. But now what Unify gives them is it actually gives them content. There's a content component to the Unify system that I feel like is going to broaden their catalog essentially, and to give them components, actually used component, like project, data that's been verified by projects. Like it's real. It's a real family that has actually worked before. Like, we now have that library of data is now going to be available. So I don't know if that's going to be part of this first release or whatever, but it was part of Unify, and I'm excited to see where that goes. That said, in the on the manufacturing side, I use McMaster car all day long. Like Fusion 360, I don't want to model some shit. Oh, I need a Luna extruded rail, or I needed a, you know, you name it, it's in there. Like, you need a hanger, you need anything, it's in the McMaster car. You'll bring in the file, and then it's perfect. We don't necessarily have anything close to that on the Revit side like we used to. A lot of the family creation websites have even kind of fallen down a rabbit hole where they're very untrustworthy. And I don't want to name names and bash those websites that were once prominent, but the data that we're getting these days is pretty garbage.
Well, I would say, you know, garbage in, garbage out, of course, you know that. BIM Object has been one of the standouts throughout the years. They've been pretty consistent.
That's a pay service though, right? BIM Object is paid.
Yeah. Well, no, they're not paid. I think you can, but I don't think I've never paid for my BIM Object membership, and I've always been able to go in and download things from them. I can double check though. I'm
pretty sure it's paid.
Okay. It might be paid. I can double check for you guys on that one.
Well, I'm looking at it right now. There's three levels. There's light, there's essential, and there's pro.
All right. Free sign up. But yeah, you're right. I mean, so I've always used the free sign up, and I mean, obviously there's probably going to be a lot better stuff in pro. But from what I've found with BIM Object is there's been a lot of standardized material from manufacturers there. Now, not to bash Unify. Like, I really look forward to Unify coming through, and I've seen it in Revit 2024. And I'm really, really, cause I mean, that's what I was used to.
We still don't have a release date though, do we?
No, I don't think so. I've been hoping it's going to come out in 2024. At least that's what we've seen. I'm hoping that it does come out. Because we've had Unify on our podcast in the past. They're good people. They really know what it takes to manage BIM families.
And they came from an engineering, MEP background.
Yeah, dude.
Dwayne Miller. Like it was a good episode.
Exactly. It was a great episode. So we know that they have a lot of good knowledge and understanding there. So I'm excited to see what happens. But I mean, in all honesty, guys, that's typically, yeah, I use BIM Object. Now, back in the day, 2013, 2014, 2015, 2016, Dave was using Autodesk Seek, right? Yeah. I was using Autodesk Seek for a lot of that.
No Revit City?
Oh, dude. I mean, I did use some Revit City, but I learned my lesson that one.
I won't go too far down that rabbit hole, but yeah, that's more or less the one that has kind of fallen off.
Oh, dude, it's horrible. Space, yeah. It's so bad. Yeah.
There's no standards. There's no oversight and, well, you know, who manages the content. Seek actually had staff. I remember there was a gentleman who's now retired. His name's Kurt Eggley. The guy's a freaking whiz. Love him dearly. He sat in the, like, literally the next, you know, space over from me. There was nothing but a couch separating us. And we used to just have great BIM conversations, but, he had an opportunity, that he ended up passing up on to go work for Seek. And that's the only way I know Seek had product, they had managers that actually overlooked the Revit family data to make sure that it was, you know, up to code and, you know, pass the smell test, so to speak. And this is just before they transitioned out of Seek to BIM Object. But the fact that you have people, like, I think that's what it takes, is you have to have people vetting the data, essentially, 100%. To make sure that it's usable. And that's no different than, I mean, we're talking about Revit families right now. And I'm not sure how we got on content as opposed to integrations and automation, but it's no different than that in your data lake from your integration in automation, you know, protocols, right? Like, all the data, everything has to be vetted before you incorporate it. Like, I've been a part of too many, you know, CRM, ERP type integrations to their implementations to count. But if you migrate data from one system to the next, it's if you're working with garbage, you're still working with garbage. It does not. Yeah. The functionality might change, but the data did not. So therefore, you have the same outcome as you did previously.
I mean, in all reality, brother, if we really want to talk about integrations for the BIM environment, that's really where one of the pieces where we have to start
is within the families that you use, standardizing some type of families, a numbering system that you can track that will be standardized to integrate data and connect that data across, you know, from one piece to the other, whether it's analysis, it's pricing, you know, whatever it is. As we start thinking about that, you know, an integration in my mind, when I start thinking about ACC Connect or WorkAuto, the way that WorkAuto works is I will look for data pills, and that's what they call it, right? But in my mind, also, it's Revit parameters, right? When we start extracting that level of data, you want to look for that, those parameters that you can connect, that you can take and match from one system to another. And that information can be a numbering system that you use for pricing to match across, right? If the manufacturer specs it at this SKU number, you know what? That SKU number is going to be put as a parameter into that Revit family, so that every time that Revit family is used at that specific size, that's what that SKU it has. And then once that registers to my integration and pulls that across, not only can it, you know, analyze how many of those I'm using, it can analyze my cost. There's so many different ways that we can take that, but you have to have that connecting, you know, information, that identification that will go across and will be able to be standardized across those multiple platforms. Because with an integration and an automation, what you guys will notice if you dive down this rabbit hole is you have to have some, even when you start, let's talk about data analytics, right? Let's include that one in the conversation. You have to have a way to connect the pieces together. If you're trying to analyze how your different projects are doing and how RFIs are impacting you, or you're trying to look at, you know, this pieces of steel at this specific size, or, you know, concrete cubic yardage that you're pouring, whatever it is, essentially, as we start to connect it to those other systems, we have to have ways to literally match it, right? Let's think about when we're back when we were kids, man. I was playing this Guess Who the other day. I've been drinking this old fashioned, man. Woo. Thinking back to that Guess Who, or just connecting the dots, right? That's essentially the same thing with an integration. You have to essentially have those standardized pieces that you know is going to connect from one platform to the other. And that's really, I mean, in data management, even when we get to the BIM side, that has to be standardized. We have to start talking and having these conversations about what data inside of our families are going to assist us with purchasing, with installing, with warranty, with, you know, whatever it's going to be inside of this, you know, I mean, whatever it is, inside of the model, and as it transitions out to construction and then to handover, right? And then maintenance or whatever it's going to be used for down that line.
I agree 100%. I was actually curious where you were going to tie back in Guess Who. That's my kid, like one of my kids' favorite games. They don't know how to play. It's hilarious because she's three.
But, dude.
it's fun. It's fun to play with.
It is. I was essentially trying to tie that back with just, you know, connecting the piece. If you're in one environment to the other, essentially you got to think about what you're getting rid of, what you want to connect these pieces together. You're going to essentially have, like, let's say with ACC, if I try to connect to build or I connect to an RFI, I'm going to have so many pieces of data. And what I need to do, and that's actually a really good point on that, Joe. Thank you for making me clarify this. With the Guess Who reference, what you need to do with integrations is you really need to start getting down to the lowest level of data, the first piece of data that you need to integrate, right? So you're kind of pushing down or pushing aside. Are you wearing a red hat? No, you're not wearing a red hat. You're not really that important at this point in time. Do you have blonde hair? Hey, you know what? This isn't really important to me at this point in time. You got to start sorting through what, like, because at the same time, like I mentioned with like an ID number, that is one specific, you got to filter through all the rest of that Revit data, the metadata, whatever's in that family or the other endpoint that you're getting to. You need to establish one single point that is going, now, of course, it will grow from there, right? It needs to grow from there. But
in all reality, you have to have a good matching case that will go an identifier, whatever it's going to be, from one platform to the other platforms. What that gives you is, once you have that one piece, right? You got the hey man, looks like you're wearing red glasses and a red hat, and you have red hair. You're this person, right? That is the piece that is going to connect our integration from, you know, one to the other, to the other, to the other. And then we can start expanding off of that. Right now, obviously, I'm going to go off of the game from here, but what you can do from there, once you have that initial piece, that stronghold, that strong foundation, let's say that ID number, what have you, then you can start adding other data to that. You can start mapping other parameters or other information that you may need that will assist with the integration, that can then map to other fields and other areas. But it's not going to match exactly, right? If we're talking Revit to purchasing, or we're talking, you know, pay apps to a CAD file, they're not going to have the same information, like the same lingo, right? They're not going to talk the same. They're going to have a lot of the information in there, but they're not going to talk the same. So what we got to do is start trying to map those out and essentially make that translation. But you got to start from that one piece.
Dude, I couldn't agree more, man. Except with your red hard hat, blonde scenario. Because you're just saying that German firefighters or German fire marshals and inspectors are more important than everybody else.
Man, I'm thinking of, I don't know why, but I'm thinking of like a red beret, blonde hair, I don't know, or red hair, whatever. I don't even know at this point. I'm trying to think about which character on the Dame Guess Who, other than maybe David or Alex, you know, I guess.
Gosh, man.
You got a red beard and a red mustache.
Oh, man. I'm trying to look it up right now, who the red beard is. Dude, there it is. All right, I found it. Dude, there's like different ones in different places. On this one, it shows David as being blonde hair with a blonde beard, and Joe yep. as blonde hair with red glasses. But I think the one I've got, Joe's a redhead.
Mm-hmm. That's funny, man.
Oh, man. That's pretty funny, dude.
I'm full of random shit. You guys will know. You guys will find that out. I'm just full of random shit. If they haven't
already in 3 years.
Yeah, right.
Dude, that brings me to another thing, dude. We've been doing this podcast for quite a while, albeit inconsistently. We've had some scheduling issues in the past. Oh, you know, people have that's kids. A good point. People get in car wrecks. People yep. just get too busy. It's life. The first two are for you, man. You got kids and got cars.
Yeah, right. But I feel like, dude, that's a great announcement, though. You know, honestly, guys, we have decided moving forward, we're going to start recording, what was it, every other week, right, Joe?
Every other week, we're going to do
an episode. Other week.
Yeah, yeah. So there'll be, I don't know if there's consensus on whether that's bi-weekly or bi-monthly, because everybody that I know is like, oh, yeah, bi-weekly means, you know, every other week. But if you look it up, it could mean every other week or twice a week, or same thing with bi-monthly. It could be every other month or twice a month. But that said, we'll be doing two a month, or every other week, rather, putting out episodes and hopefully meaningful content for our listeners. We've, you know, amassed quite the listeners. And again, we're so thankful for you guys. It's been organic. We do like no promotion outside of LinkedIn. And yet we have people reaching out to us all the time saying, dude, put out another episode already.
Yes.
Like, just shut up and record.
It's been awesome, honestly, to see that, guys. And to tell you the truth, we love the feedback. You know, for you guys to reach out, Will, Al, Mike, thank you guys so much for reaching out. We love the feedback, guys. We, you know, whether it's good or bad, we love to hear it. And we want to, you know, obviously we've been hearing a lot lately, make more episodes, man, make more content. So we've got on a schedule and we want to, you know, we want to put out more content. And of course, we want to keep with the original idea, guys. I know that for the last little while, we've kind of focused on construction. Joey, you and I have been in construction for, you know, a little while, like we've been in that environment. And we want to make sure that we kind of keep it broad as well, right? We're trying to focus on BIM and how it affects our industry as a whole. So we'll have conversations on design. We'll have conversations on construction, and we're trying to keep that going. So the interviews that we have started lining up this year, guys, I'm really excited for it. Joey kind of mentioned one that will be coming up. I know we wanted to circle back to that because we do have an exciting announcement for that. I know that'll be coming out. I can't say when yet, but I know that'll be coming out soon. So we do have an update there. But it's been awesome, really. I mean, it's been, like Joey said, 3 years, dude. It's kind of nuts. Like we've been doing this for so long, but at the same time, it's kind of nice. Like we've been able to keep the conversation going. We're still providing content, and we're at a space now where we realized, you know, we kind of tried to adjust during COVID and find that good place of where we're putting out information, you know, putting out content, but also not doing it so much that we run out of stuff to talk about, right? So we want to keep stuff going. And at this point, I think we've got a good thing going, and we're going to do it, you know, every other week. We've got some good people coming on, and I'm excited for the future of Brewing with BIM.
Yeah, me too, man. And listeners, stay tuned as Dave rants more about AI, his new Ford Raptor.
I did get a Ford Raptor. Yes, I did. Oh,
and I fall into my own, you know, biases in the, you know, maker space, you know, because that's what I love right now, right? We all have different kinks and hobbies, but we're definitely looking forward to having more useful guests on, like not more useful, but more relevant, more interesting guests, that not that our other ones haven't been interesting, but we're just trying to figure out that perfect balance of, you know, how do we bring industry folks out and let them talk about what's been successful to them without it seeming like a shameless plug. So we obviously want to, you know, not that anybody's done that in the past, but we want to like squeeze out the extra nuggets of information that our guests bring with them and figure out what that secret sauce is, because they've got all the information in the world to share. Dave and I are just two people, and Jordan obviously is three people, but like these guests we bring on, like they've got like very useful information that we just want to make sure is getting out to you guys. And you know, and it's less about Dave and I ranting and more about highlighting those guys when we have those guys on, but for the most part, Dave and I just ranting.
Well, yeah, dude. And I definitely, you know, one thing that opened my eyes last year was the podcast that we had with Gary Cohen.
Oh my God, that guy's amazing.
Dude, he's amazing. But for those of you who don't know, I mean, if you didn't listen to that podcast, of course, go back and give it a listen. But there is a BBC special on their project, the Mayfair Hotel Mega Build. It's a TV series that talks about, you know, how they did what they did. I mean, that project in itself is nuts, right? And in my mind, dude, there's so many of these projects. I mean, obviously that one was in the UK, but there are projects that are happening in the US all over. And I'd love to be able to get some people that are talking about different projects, whether they're airport projects, they're roadway projects, they're, you know, skyscraper, whatever it is, guys, we're going to try
just complex out of the norm projects,
right?
That have their own set of unique experiences that are worth sharing. And I think that's the valuable component to us. Right or wrong, whatever happened on those projects, I think it's worth sharing that information. And Dave, without tipping the hand too much, we do have quite a few lined up that definitely fit that bill. So it'll be exciting.
Yes, sir. It is. I'm like I said, dude, I'm super excited for this next year and the future with Brewing with BIM. I'm excited to get back into this with you guys and produce more content and, you know, have some more interviews out there. That you guys can, you know, listen to and learn from. And again, if you guys have any questions, feel free to hit us up. You know, obviously, this is our side hustle kind of thing. We do this for fun. We enjoy doing this podcast. And one of the other things we really love about this is making the connections with all of you. We do appreciate every one of you that reaches out to LinkedIn or, you know, Twitter or any of our other a software application.
Every time I hear somebody say Twitter, it just makes me think of OJ Simpson. Hello, Twitter world. Sorry.
No, dude.
That's by the way, amazing. It's X, man. It's X.
It's X. It is come X. On. That's right.
DMX, he told now. You.
Or is X that, gonna no, give DMX. It to you. Is that DMX? Or... it is DMX, yeah, dude.
X gonna give it to you. We've got a lot like coming out, hopefully, you know, pretty soon. That we look forward to sharing and building this community and getting other people on the episode to share episodes to share their unique stories and takes. If you got one, share it with us. That said, I'm actually curious. I want to throw this out to our listeners, maybe a little poll. Maybe I'll throw it on LinkedIn. Either way, reach out to us on LinkedIn and let us know the answer. If you're listening to this, what are some other podcasts you listen to and what are some topics you're interested in?
Oh, that's a great one, dude. I actually just had this conversation. Of course, you know, we'll shout out to Construction Dorks and the Contech crew. But, you know, we've talked about them and had Josh Bone and some of the other guys on the podcast. Jeff Samples, of course. But any podcast that you guys listen to.
We didn't have Jeff Samples on.
No. I was saying, weren't you on his podcast? You were on his podcast?
Amazing. Iron Man, dude. He's awesome, man.
Were you on his podcast with Construction Dorks?
Yeah. I did a Construction Dorks with him and Travis Boss, those guys. But Travis Aldhouse, who was also on Construction Dorks, I don't know if he was regular or if he was just on a few episodes, but the guy's a whiz as well. He's in that whole circle of, plumbing, you know, MEP guys that now he's electrical that are just wizards in the BIM industry. In that space, and now he's tied in with a friend of ours, and maybe we'll get him on an episode. I don't know.
Heck yeah, dude.
I'll ask him before I post this, but I'd like to get him.
Any other podcasts you guys listen to or you guys are doing? We love to plug other podcasts. We love to have conversations with you guys. We'll jump on and have a conversation with you, or you guys can jump on here.
We're just a bunch of geeks in the industry. There are so many other people we idolize. We did a, what was it? Like a happy hour during COVID where everybody was trying to do remote stuff. Mm-hmm. Jeopardy style trivia competition with the Construction Dorks crew. They murdered us. Those guys are very smart. Again, it was, you know, in their wheelhouse and stuff, but you know, they murdered us. So like, there are definitely more knowledgeable people in the industry that we love to promote and talk to and stuff. Jonathan Marsh with Steel Toe Consulting, like those guys are, dude, he's doing some amazing stuff up there. There's so many smart people out there that we just want to highlight and just be part of the community.
To connect you guys with too. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
If you have questions, Josh Bone, we'd love to make that connection.
If you guys are not plugged into Josh Bone at Electory, you guys are, and you're in the MEP space, you're freaking missing out. That guy is like the godfather of BIM for MEP. He is amazing. Like, follow that guy.
Yes. Yes, sir.
All right, man. Well, I think that wraps it up because I am out of beer. I drank three of these Brew for Your Diet.
I did finish my old fashioned as well. Yes, sir. I moved on to water at this point.
Good call. Good call, my friend. All right. Well, dude, it was a pleasure, man. As always, our listeners, we look forward to doing more episodes in the future. Stay tuned. We got more coming out. Whoop, whoop.